Yep, this is your boy Mzin.
This is your boy Vumi.
This is the Must Chats podcast. God damn.
It's the what?
It's the Must Chats podcast.
It's the Must Chats podcast. I can't believe that this thing still exists, Mzin. Can you?
Hey, dog. They've been on a sabbatical of sorts, bruh.
Yeah, look, man.
But yes, what a sabbatical, bruh. Jeez.
Yeah, look. We would sit here for a 3-day episode if we were to cover everything that has occurred in the podcast's absence, but I'm sure the listeners are very much aware of global conditions at the moment and what we're going through.
I feel like you're right, and I feel like there's a lot that's happened, and actually this is probably the best time to come back into it.
Exactly. As we transition into another mess.
Hey, dog.
But we'll get to that.
Yeah, international mess and local messes, bro.
Yeah, look, man. Local is always a mess, one could argue.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what? We've been used to a mess, but there are spikes, you know, and a bit some troughs of, you know, the differences in the messiology.
In the messiology. That's a good one. That's a shout out to messiology. I don't think that exists, but yeah, we're...
it definitely does not.
Shit. All right. So here's the first thing about, I think we can start with some local messes, because I think everyone knows what the international mess is going to be, given the date of this podcast, 4th of November 2020.
Yeah. We'll get to that stuff towards the end of the podcast.
Yeah. Let's start with some local messes. So our favorite weekly, daily soapy, known as the State Capture Inquiry.
Oh my God.
Has been giving us some gold of late. It's been giving us amnesia. It's been giving us just a lot to think about as a country. I like just break it down for us there, Zed, if you want to.
I just got some goosebumps, literally. Because everything that I've been watching in the last couple of days has just come flooding into my veins right now, and I'm getting that feeling of absolute shock, not surprise, but shock and anger, yeah, that emanates through my veins, beloved. Of late, and I think actually it's this section of the Commission of Inquiry which has really probably seen one of the most
one of the most what?
Of people in power that I've seen.
Hold up. We lost the connection there. We're losing the connection.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you, but we lost the connection there. So you said the last thing I heard was, you said has been one of the most, and then it just cut off.
Word. So I think I was saying that it's been one of the most true reflections of incompetence and sheer disregard of the citizens of South Africa that I've seen in a while. So this part of the commission that focuses largely on state-owned entity of, well, the state-owned airline of SAA, and the dealings that occurred there between companies that the companies that are associated with board members of SAA, and yeah, so the mess that has been occurring there. So I don't know if you recall, I don't know if we spoke about it on this podcast with regards to Mr. Nzeko, who was one of the board members of the Swissport and had a couple of companies on the side as well.
No, I don't think
did we speak about that.
Nah.
But in any case, this was connected to that. I think people of South Africa will recognize Mr. Nzeko. Mm. So this time they were chatting with Ms. Kwinana. She's the a previous chairman of the or chairperson of the SAA board, as well as she had a company called Guinana and Associates, which did a lot of work for the SAA, or if I'm not mistaken, or some state entities.
Well, she's an accountant by profession. So
chartered accountant, yeah.
Yeah,
chartered accountant.
So basically, so she was the board member of SAA, but also her accounting firm was also asked to do work for the AG's office, for the Auditor General's office. Just as a side note to this woman's operations. But so at the State Capture Inquiry, it was actually only about her role as a board member in SAA. Yeah. So basically she was there in her capacity as a board member at SAA, she's being interrogated obviously in her role with some very, very, very dodgy dealings. So it's been the most shocking testimony because, like, first of all, this, like, she clearly, like, either there's something incredibly wrong or she is incredibly brave and has some massive ass cojones on her to be that condescending to both the attorney, to the advocate, sorry, and the Chief Justice, Deputy Chief Justice.
To be honest, beloved, I think it's the latter. I think they know very, very well what they are doing. And I think the mere fact that it's not a court of law, you know, even though the implications of the findings of the commission might be damning professionally or in terms of the public image,
yeah.
I think they know that the findings aren't necessarily what will lead to their convictions or anything. Do you know what I mean? So they know that the consequences aren't really that deep, even though it's damning. I think the consequences of the findings of the commission might be worse off politically rather than personally to them. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's like, it's great. It should be personally, right? Because, I mean, as her lawyer was trying to advocate today by saying that, like, oh no, that was for someone else, sorry. But, like, there are real implications for their testimony in this capture of inquiry, right? Ever since the president authorized that determination for the Department of Justice to be able to prosecute based on testimony at the state of the inquiry, right? So,
yeah.
So the thing is, it's like, the fact of the matter is, if they continue to play dumb and what, they think they're getting away with it by not providing evidence. But I think they're actually doing themselves a greater disservice, because we'll even take the example of Dudumyeni, where she just basically pled the fifth, which doesn't exist in SA, but she basically refused to incriminate herself by replying to any of the
questions. Yeah, she. I think it's called invoking privilege. To not incriminate herself.
Yeah, it's just pleading the fifth sounds cooler. Anyway, so you see, that's the thing. Whereas, like, you make yourself look extremely, extremely guilty, and the fact that you're not replying could eventually down the road lead to the prosecuting authorities concluding some facts that they need based on the fact that you won't actually reply. And the only reason that you won't reply is obviously because you know that you probably did some shit. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's the thing, Vumi. So they'd rather kick the can along the road rather than say what it is now anyway. So in other words, because we've seen that after testimony that has been put out in the commission, arrests have been made, right? So clearly they are trying to avoid having that happen, and hopefully at a later stage maybe that might happen, but they're avoiding it now. So what they're gonna do is deny, which is really what Miss Guinana was doing, even though it was blatant, guy.
Yeah, straight up.
I mean, like, she was just denying everything. Even if they produced documentation. She questioned the ethnicity. What is it? Ethnicity
or
what?
Authenticity.
Bundles
ran out there.
Yes, she questioned the authenticity of such documentation and numerous times. And I think like they were really in shock as well. Like the evidence leader as well as the deputy chief justice was like, wait, what? Like, I think there were many times where they just couldn't believe what she was saying. And she knew exactly what she was saying, you know what I mean?
And she was saying that she could communicate with the JM Aviation guy and they wouldn't talk about operational matters. And then he was then the judge was asked, it was like, but if you wouldn't talk about operational matters, how would you know that he was in an operational role at JM Aviation?
Guy, and then she was just putting herself in a corner.
And the thing is, it's like, you know, some like how they seem all dazed and confused and they can't articulate themselves. So it's got, on one side, it's got my sympathetic side being like, okay, Shame, is it just because, like, you know, the command of the Queen's English really ain't 100%, which I don't buy? Or is it a fact that, like, just clearly these people are just grossly incompetent?
Nah, I think it's the latter. You know why? I thought about that before. Because remember when Mr. Nzeko went there, the JM guy?
Yeah.
He went there and initially he asked for an interpreter, right? And the interpreter did the things, but I think they could see that this guy actually understands what's popping and he can respond accordingly and he doesn't actually need an interpreter, you know? And I think an interpreter would have taken way longer as well. But in any case, they continued without one. And he understood very well, but he deliberately, that's my understanding, is that they deliberately just want to confuse things and not answer the question the way it's been asked, you know? And I think, and they obviously, and it's so apparent that this lady, Ms. Kunana, and Mr. Nzeko know each other, like, on, like, they know each other, guy. Like, she was even calling him on a first name basis at times, and was like correcting herself to say Mr. Nzeko, you know, because she kept on calling him Vuyo. And I was just like, but it's very. Yeah, man, the way they treated the doctor, what's his name? The Zimbabwean, doctor, what's his name, man? Dr. Bauer.
Okay.
The guy who was the head of procurement, I think.
Maybe I missed that episode.
Guy, the way, like, she, like, the way they treated that guy. And they said that she wrote like a scathing email saying that he's anti-transformation, that he's not about black empowerment, all these things. And the chief justice was like, you know, she asking her, how can you even say something like that to a fellow African, a Zimbabwean, someone who's been through the things we've been through in Africa, here in South Africa, you know? And, like, he was so much in shock, like, at how she was painting him as if he was a white foreigner, for example. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not from Africa, even.
But here's my question. How do these people have the political connections to be appointed to these incredibly critical positions in state-owned enterprises?
What do you mean, how, for me?
What? I mean, like, I'm trying to think about how, like, in any universe, right, this lady has any, like, that she has any capacity to actually not fall over herself when she's talking to someone. Like, I'm just trying to understand how you get to the place that you are in the board of SAA and having such a demeanor. Like, I just don't get it.
But you do know who appoints board members, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure. The DPE.
So for example, we could have friends or whatever now. Next thing you know, Vumi is a member of party and he's in this position, and then you just appoint us as homies and you're like, guys, eat. You know what I mean? And that's how it happens. Because also people don't take notice of board appointments, guy. You just assume that there's checks and balances. Yeah. But I mean, you just assume that there's checks and balances that will allow for, you know, I mean, like critical things, dog, being a board member or something. We always just watch. It's another thing which is what the liberal hack was saying the other day, is that, or in fact today, he was saying that we always look at the top of the organogram, and you always focus on that, but we don't realize that below, as it trickles down, those people are as powerful and as influential and as dirty as the ones that are above them. You know what I mean? And those are the ones that are actually the most dangerous. Because they are using state funds and stuff with the most ease of anyone.
Yeah, and that segues into the next point quite brilliantly, actually. Because the thing is, I've been noticing a lot of people complaining about obviously on social media, complaining about the fact that a lot of these blitz of arrests that are going on through the hawks, MPA, SIU, all that stuff. Everyone's like, oh no, these are like low-level guys. I want to see a minister in overalls. But it's like, the fact of the matter is that in order to cleanse the system, you need to, in order for it to start to function well, right, before you solve the political head problem, because that's not going to be solved if you just throw someone in jail. No, that the fact the ANC has to solve that by not being a corrupt party. But the thing is like, if you want to start fixing things on the operational level, which, as you said, is vitally important for the actual day-to-day running of things, you need to go for these like DGs, these managers, senior managers, and below.
Yeah, man, it's and you know, I really don't know. To be honest, I hope that the Deputy Justice has a lot of assistance when it comes to, like, because I don't know if one person can actually, like, surely he must have people who go through things and have recommendations, right?
There's a whole team, though.
Yeah, like, and then he looks over all those things as well, because there's a lot here, Vumi. Like, there is a lot.
No, it's a mess. It's a mess.
And yeah, man. And going through this every day, I think you'd lose your mind, actually.
I think you'd be angry, and I think at some point you'd feel. You'd resign to the madness of it. I mean, he's been chuckling for the past 2 days at the ridiculousness of it all, of their replies, of the scale, of just the negligence. I just don't understand how you can reach that level of disregard, that level, to the point where you're like, the thing is falling apart. Like, I mean, eat, right? But you know, I don't say you know, don't eat, right? Eat, fine. Everyone eats all around the world. But like, if you're now eating to the point where the thing is falling off the rails,
but for me,
in the case of SAA, falling off the sky.
It's greed, beloved. It's greed. There's no other explanation. It's greed, you know? And I think once you've been doing something for so long, it becomes... So, for example, Vumi, if you say you've been earning 10,000 rand every month, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you get an opportunity to start eating 100,000 every month, and you're eating 100,000 every month for 5 years. That 100,000 is gonna start feeling like it was the 10,000, you know, and you're just gonna want more. So even though you've been chowing 100,000, now you want a mil. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't stop because you've been getting away with chowing the 100,000 all the time. Why can't you get away with chowing a million all the time? Yeah. And then you actually get away with chowing a million. You're like, oh, damn, I can I mean, nothing's happened. I bet we keep going. And if something falls apart, nah, you know, the politicians have got us. They're going to inject more funds into this thing. How about a 10.5 billion?
Yeah, that's the key thing. Accountability. That accountability. Like, yeah. that's how you regulate these things. Because, obviously, if you see that you're doing this and getting away with it, of course, you're not going to give a shit, because you're like, oh, well, I'm just going to eat until the party's over and I'm going to leave. Because they appoint people who have no interest whatsoever in any of these sectors that they oversee.
For me, that's the thing that was very upsetting when I heard the testimony of Mr. Nzeko, is the mere fact that this guy knows nothing about the aviation industry.
Nothing.
Zero. And he says it too. Like, he's not afraid about it. You know?
Hey.
And then all they're doing is just chowing money. And it's so unfortunate, because the thing is, sometimes, you know, when I'm watching this stuff, I'm like, these people, I don't even believe that they are competent enough for these positions. Because you can have someone who's competent and just a thief. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
But then now you have someone who's a thief and they're incompetent.
And the thing is, you ask yourself that we've withered away accountability so much that even these incompetent Mamparas were actually getting away with it for a good significant chunk of time.
They were really getting away with this thing, man. And the thing is, most of them got away with it and they left.
Yeah.
You know how long that period was of those? Because people don't like to say, no, those 9 years of Zuma were a bad guy. They definitely were. We're not saying the previous 9 years didn't have any of that stuff, but guy, there was a lot of damage done.
Oh, extremely.
There was a lot of damage done.
Ever since the Scorpions, I'm convinced. I agree with that analysis.
That he got rid of them so that he can continue to do things in impunity.
Yeah, because if you look at all the cases that the Scorpions were bringing up, except the big dog ones that got them in trouble, they were like, as in like, and those were like literally cases where, like, for example, the whole the Brett Kebo one, they actually like did kind of throw what's his name, that ex police commissioner, I think, like. I forgot him anyway.
Riyabiega or the guy?
The guy before.
The one who was in Interpol, the leader of Interpol as well.
Yes.
Oh,
I've forgotten his name.
Yeah, awesome.
Anyway, if you look at the work that the Scorpions were doing, they were catching these DGs, these senior managers, these board members, this. So they were catching that nonsense there in the middle layer, right?
Yeah.
But then as soon as now they were like, okay, but when they changed tactic, I reckon, because they were like, look, we can have a field day with these DG and operative layer guys, right? But we actually need to be like, who's actually calling the shots here, right? And then they went for JZ, and obviously they got shut down. And ever since they got shut down, it's been floodgates. Free for all.
Yeah, no.
And you sit there, and you're like, is there justice?
What I'm thinking about, Vumi, is in that time, in that period, when he disbanded them, did he have the sole power to disband?
The ANC did it.
So, in other words, it was a thing that went to parliament and then it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so if they just had the majority, then they were cool. Yeah.
You can argue that is the crux of all the issues that we face, is the fact that the ANC has such a powerful majority.
And whatever the leader says, pops.
And pops, exactly. It's not like maybe there'll be 10 or 5 or 6, 7 MPs that'll be like, no, you can't do this, can't do that. Because then the ANC will take you out. they'll be like, okay, not take, like, not kill you, but like kick you out of the, well, maybe kill you, kick you out of the party. Or recall you. Because isn't you, that's another problem. It's because you are appointed by the ANC, is it? Huh? Or am I lying?
No. But that's their own process, though. So, like...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So in other words, you can be in National Assembly and be part of the ANC, and the ANC can say you must step down, but they have no power to actually make you step down.
Right,
it's just that you are... So you are abiding by... You know how it is, dog. Yeah. So, but they can't literally just decide who they're moving you.
Yeah.
You know, they can decide,
Which is why that was why the arguments during the Zuma impeachment episodes. That's why the DA was like, well, let's put in a vote, an anonymous ballot, right? Because because obviously there are people in there are MPs in the ANC who have a conscience. Even though saying that doesn't sound right,
but they just fear. They fear being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which still, even now, even after that whole fiasco, are they showing that they have a spine? They're not, because they still fear.
Yeah, and that is the problem. That I think we once spoke about this. That is the problem. The fact that it has to be a private or secret ballot in order for them to actually show their true colors or to be honest.
Which says a lot about the ANC. Because the thing is,
but also it says a lot about the ANC and those individuals, both of them, both to like that.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true.
And maybe that's just a problem with party politics as well, you know? You can't step out of line of the party if you disagree with it. Like for example, when we say you, you're in this party, there's 10 principles, right?
Mm.
But you agree with 8 principles of the 10. Now, in matters that pertain to the other 2 principles, you have to keep quiet and continue on and approve certain things based off the other 2 principles, even though you don't like them, simply because you're part of the party. That can't be right.
Look,
you should be allowed to be like, look, no, I don't agree with this, and therefore I'm not going to vote for it or something. You know what I mean?
The fact of the matter is it also requires a level of political maturity, right? So you need to believe in the mission that you're doing so much so that if there is something that, because you're going to always compromise, there's always compromise in life, right?
Yeah,
but when a
yeah.
decision comes across your table that you know is going to affect your constituents, right? You know that this is going to be a fuck, like for a fact, right? And if you cannot step up and say that, right.
I think that's the critical part, Vumi.
That's the critical part. So you need to have that maturity to be I'm sacrificing my position. I know I'm going to get kicked out. I know I'm going to be told to step down. But I'm going to do it.
Yeah. But I also think sometimes you just have to be honest with your constituents, for example. So sometimes you can just be like, look, my position, you know my position as my constituents in my district or whatever. However, as the party, this is the decision that they're taking for such and such a reason. Even though I'm against it, I know that I'm going to vote with the party because the greater picture in future, when there are things that pertain to our issues, they will be backed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So perhaps it's about voicing that even though you are against this thing, you're going to vote for it because of the party things, so that at least we know that you have some form of being an individual as well.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But obviously, if it's one of those critical things, those votes that are critical, then you can't just keep quiet and also just vote as well. Like, at some point, you have to draw the line.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Otherwise, then there wouldn't be names assigned to things. There would just be, you're an ANC member, ANC member 1 or ANC member 2. You know what I mean?
Such and such. Yeah. No, that's what I say. So, it needs political maturity. And I think that's something that's something that's lacking within the ANC and maybe even within the DA and the EFF as well in general. They just aren't MPs who carry themselves. They just sit there. Oh, sorry. They just sit there and do what the party tells them. They're what the chief whips it.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I know we've moved away a bit from the commission, but because we're talking about the party politics and stuff now, if we can just move towards the DA, the DA recently had the federal council, federal council.
Federal council.
So where they vote for certain strategic positions within the DA, and there was a lot of pepe about the fact that they are majority white and majority male in terms of the leadership, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it, and to be quite honest with you, I'm actually not that pressed. I was trying to see, like, in other words, of people's outrage, you know? Like, you know, people are saying that they're saying that they talk about diversity, but there's no diversity there, actually. And yeah, sure, but the thing is, in my view, they've actually missed out, as Trump would say, bigly on Umbalintuli.
Yeah.
She, to be quite honest with you, I think she actually, if she was the leader of the DA now, I think the party, the percentage of votes that they get in municipal elections and even national elections when they come would increase quite a bit. But I don't think that is the focus of what the DA actually wants to do. I think they really just want to be the dog that barks at the car but doesn't know what to do once the car stops.
I'll agree to a certain extent there. So,
let me just finish.
Yeah.
So I think they generally want to gain back those, so the immediate goal is to gain back those voters that defected to the FF Plus. They want to get back those people and strengthen that base, and they want to appeal to South Africans' diversity of how you say gray matter and other skills, you know, and skills as opposed to diversity of race, right? And cultural diversity, because I don't think that they actually appeal to that at all, in fact, as well. And I think they just want to change people's minds on how to vote, that you don't have to just vote because there are black faces or whatever. But I don't think South Africa is ready for that. We're just not there yet. I think they just putting, they're reaching too early for that. Yeah, but yeah, go on, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'll agree with most of what you've said. Regarding not voting for Ntuli being a missed opportunity, for sure, 100%.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate, but it also was unfortunate that she happened to run against Steyn-Ys. Like, to be honest with you, there was no realistic chance that she was going to win against Steyn-Ys. Because, I think strategically, I would have told her, yo, just wait for the next round, because you're not going to win against Steyn-Ys. Like, he's been there too long. He's been a somewhat effective chief whip. Like, there was no way he wasn't going to be the next one up there. He peppered and peppered as well in parliament. Like,
Avumi, he wasn't just somewhat a good chief whip. I think he was actually a great chief whip.
Yeah.
But Yeah, but I think you're right. I think it's one of those things that where actually I think it was a good thing that she put herself out there this time. Yeah. She probably knew Uguti she wasn't going to win in any case.
Yeah.
But it was a good place to start to sort of the dog biting at of barking at the moon, so to speak, and the moon barking back, and then people are like, oh, okay. You know, people notice when the moon barks back. Yeah. So I think it was a good place for her to start. And then now she's going to be part of the political narrative when it comes to the DA leadership.
Yeah. And I mean, that was one of the criticisms that the Liberal hack had, where he was like, she just isolated herself in KZN and didn't really make herself visible nationwide. But I mean, it's good. It's a good beginning. If she can keep it up, if she doesn't decide to leave that, like a lot of other people are doing in the DA, then I think there's...
Yeah, I don't think she'll do that, because if she does, I think that will compromise her actual, you know, her... What she... Like, I mean, whenever people deflect and stuff, it's like you don't really believe them anymore, you know?
Yeah. So the other comment regarding about the DA sort of solely focusing on being an opposition and not really gunning for national dominance... I think it's very easy to say that, but then also at the same time, you need to realize the threat posed to their base by the Freedom Front Plus, right? So the issue is that they don't want to lose their core base, because as you can see globally, like, politics is getting even more fragmented, right? So if they don't appease the base, they will completely lose it to the Freedom Front Plus, and then probably lose like, what, 5-7%, which is like detrimental to them. So the thing is, if they were actually content with being a sort of an opposition party and never had like aspirations for government, I don't think they would have pushed or fought as hard in the municipalities where they won, in PE and Tshwane. I don't think they would have been challenging the EFF and the ANC so hard in terms of actually getting shit running if they weren't interested about showing what they can do, right? Because the thing is, to be honest,
but for me,
wait, you can hold on. Let me finish the train of thought. Because to be honest, for them to advertise their governing in the Western Cape clearly hasn't worked so far. But also, the historical advantage that the Western Cape has had throughout the country's history also doesn't help their case, because the ANC can very easily say, yeah, but you guys inherited the province with the most robust infrastructure, probably after Gauteng, if not better than Gauteng, to be honest with you. So the thing is, they're pressing to prove their governance credentials in other provinces. But the problem is that their base is being eroded by increasingly fragmented and misplaced notions of nationalism within the white minority in SA.
No, I feel you. But and just to go back to what you were saying that, you know, they wouldn't have contested so much in those district, in those municipalities, you know. But that was under the leadership of Musi, you know.
so
what I'm trying to say is that now, as he's gone, that leadership, so in other words, those objectives, right, of trying to prove themselves that they can govern in other places other than the Western Cape, I think it also left with Musi, in my opinion. Because I think Musi thought that, okay, because the Western Cape is all set and it's not going anywhere when it comes to the DA, let's venture out and start to prove to people that we're not just a rhetoric, you know? So in other words, how can you just only on one election try to do that and you fail, right? Which they did to some degree, in terms of showing how to lead in those other areas. But obviously there's other factors involved, like, you know, other parties that were critical to that. But how can you say, okay, now that it didn't work, let's revert back to what we know, so to speak, even though it coincides with the defecting of that base, that other base, you know? So in other words, now, so you're telling me now, because that didn't work and some report that, yeah, Musi Maimane sanctioned himself, said that they failed. So now you're going to go back to just running the Western Cape and taking care of your base, which I understand, to take, get your base back. But that, I don't think that's the way to go if you're really trying to be a party that is wanting to govern nationally, you know, and compete nationally.
I hear that. I hear that. And that's obviously a fair assessment, but I think they're also in a phase of damage control, because they did lose a lot in the last elections. And it also the last elections, you had the effect of Ramaphosa coming in, and obviously a lot of people being swayed by that, being like, okay, let's give the ANC one more chance. But
that's not
going to be the case in the next municipal elections. So I think they can pull off a sort of rebuilding phase to consolidate and make sure that the Freedom Front doesn't appeal them a lot more. But obviously, I know Steenhuisen has the energy to take it national. As cringe as his Facebook lives are, even though I've never watched them, he does have the energy, the zest to push nationally. The problem is that he doesn't have the political skill to push for an increased black middle class vote.
Yeah, that's critical.
Yeah, substantially. So the thing is, this also aligns with what the Liberal hack was saying. I hope he never figures out. I actually don't personally. You call him that, actually. Remember I say?
Avumi, I heard that from you first.
Don't lie. Anyway, so that's the thing, right? Also the race stuff, it's just a mess. So that's why I'm saying they're in a consolidation phase. But I don't think you can discount the fact that Steenhuisen has the energy. So look, man, there's some people out there who really do fuck with the white savior complex vibe, and they'll vote for it. I think so.
Excuse me. I don't know. For me, the thing is, for me, is that I just don't believe him, man. And what he's saying sounds all right, but I don't believe that he has that factor of bringing people together across a certain, because there's always people are, they're not just one issue voters or all, so you can find one issue amongst a lot of people that they care mostly about to connect them, to convince them to vote for you. You know what I mean? So even though you don't talk about, even though you can say no, BEE is wrong and the way it's done is wrong or whatever, you should rather do it in terms of different factors. You know that what they always chat about in terms of poverty factor and not color factor, which is stuff that makes logical sense, right? But the mere fact that you're not, it's as if that you're fighting it so hard that you're not, instead, so you, yeah, it, rather than coming up with another issue that can overshadow it and be and people to stand behind that, rather. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you see, that's part of the damage control, because they know the base is affected by that chat, and the thing is, it's unfortunate that white liberal politics has gone that way, and I think it's also probably been an effect of the increased influence of alt-right politics from the US, I think.
Yeah.
Especially from what I see, the way people comment on Facebook, like the way a lot of white South Africans comment on Facebook, and it's as if like you're looking at an American comment section. I think there's a lot of sort of misplaced white nationalism that for many white South Africans who didn't fully embrace the transition are now comfortable to express those views because of what's going on in the US. I don't think we can underrepresent that fact.
I think they actually just, what the DA is doing is just choosing between two evils, you know, the lesser that they believe is the lesser of the two evils. It's like, look, we'll just have to sacrifice people thinking that we're not about, you know, black empowerment for the sake of getting a bigger base, as you were saying, so that they can be stable, so that they can in future then, you know, start to plan out a more national agenda or something.
Yeah, I mean, look, local government elections are going to be interesting as hell. It's going to be very interesting.
Do you think there'll be many shocks and stuff like this?
Look, one shock is going to be, it's going to be the lowest turnout ever. Second...
Yo, shock, lowest turnout?
Yeah, it's going to be the lowest turnout ever. I'm telling you.
Because of what?
Because of, obviously, I think COVID's still going to be around. Secondly, yeah, people are done, bro. People are done.
You think that voter apathy is just...
Yeah, dog. I mean, obviously, it's still going to be super high compared to, Western democracies, right? It's still going to be high. They'll look at it and be jealous. But I still think it's going to be the lowest of this democratic era. For the reasons that I mentioned. But I also think that it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen with those coalitions in PE, in Tswane,
Joburg.
I think that's where it's really going to be interesting, and I think that's where I think the DA can find opportunity and be like, look, national is a bit fucked right now, but like let's push the municipal thing. Let's push away. You really can't question us on our record in terms of actually providing services. Forget housing, human settlements, and all that stuff, because that is just the most messiest sector of the whole provincial versus national system of government. I think that is one of the biggest problems that faces SA if we transition into a coalition political system, whereas if you start seeing maybe the DA or even the EFF, maybe the EFF wins Limpopo and they want to do things their way in terms of providing housing and doing stuff, but then they obviously can't because there's the Department of Human Settlements nationally that sets the agenda, which is what the DA has always cried about. And it would be interesting to see if an all black party would have the same cry. I remember first-hand knowledge sitting in meetings like that, where obviously the provincial officials would be like, look, we wanted to do this, but national said, no, you can't do this. I don't know if maybe that was just excuse, but the relationship between Department of Human Settlements nationally and provincially was just a mess. And it would be interesting to see if a party other than the DA had the same experience if they were to run a province. So I think, to my initial point, I think the DA can probably push and be like, look, Joburg, shit's hitting the fan. Things are breaking, water's cutting, electricity, all is going out, except outside of load shedding. Like, look at Cape Town, we can sort this shit out. And I think they can probably appeal to, as you said, we have the uniqueness of we're not single issue voters, but we're not also single election voters. So the patterns between national and provincial elections differ hectically. And I think that's where the DA gets most of its black supporters during those elections, because they know when they come to Cape Town, they're like, oh, okay, fine. You guys actually, okay, sure. And then they, you know, and then they can make that deduction.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see. And I also hope that maybe the EFF can get a municipality so that we can see what they're made of in terms of actually governing.
And I think, that's what they cried about just before the last elections, you know? They were like, okay, we're ready to lead, you know, we must be given an opportunity, blah, blah, blah. And I agree with that, there must be, but I don't think I want to see them given an opportunity in like a big ass municipality. They must start small somewhere, right? And show us what they can do with that, rather, you know, so that they have, so that there's no complaints about in a big municipality saying, no, you know, these other parties, they also influence, blah, blah, blah. Let us see what you can do when you run a whole district municipality or something, you know? So that we can, so that you can say, okay, look, this is what we did. We ran this. Now give us a bigger municipality or whatever. So,
or I would be, you know what I'd be interested to see? I'd be interested to see the ANC being taken out of the equation in the municipality.
Oh, completely.
And to see how the EFF and the DA deal with each other. I think we could see some interesting results there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I reckon the EFF would force the DA to be a bit more serious about dealing with townships. Yeah. I reckon.
And service delivery and things.
Because the problem is, when the EFF and the ANC are close to each other, they start sharing their tendencies, and then they obviously gang up on the DA for obvious historical reasons.
Yeah.
Right. So. Which is the problem we've been seeing. So I think it would be interesting to see. Because to be honest, if it was an ANC-EFF municipality, I don't think anything.
Yeah, I also feel
the same. I think maybe one or two things just for show, Nyana. But then, like, the scandals would start very shortly
after.
Whereas if it was the DA-EFF thing, they're so mistrusting of each other that they'll want to be the best examples of themselves in order to not be called out by the other side, that I think shit might get done. I don't know, maybe I'm just being naive, but I think that like a negative and a negative make a positive.
Yeah, I mean, there's a possibility, Doug. There's a possibility. I mean, we did see remnants of that in Joburg at some point, right? With Herman and them.
Yeah.
So it is a possibility, but I think the thing with the EFF is that it's not so much that it's the DA, but they need to see a black person in the front of the DA, even, you know what I mean? So that they can be more helpful. Because I think if it was just another white person, they'd be very combative off the basis that they're just white. You know what I mean? And that just feeds their base and or whatever. And I don't think they would want to make, for example, if Herman was white, they wouldn't be, even if he was the same person, you know, they wouldn't be helpful as that, because it would make it seem as though a white person is leading in Joburg and doing well. You know what I mean? And that goes against their, you know, what they're trying to say or what they're trying to do. So, which is.
But now to move on to our last meal of the evening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The fiasco that is the presidential elections in the unstable
asshole of a country
in the unstable state of the United States of America, with the autocratic regime disputing the results of the Independent Electoral Commission, with international observers encouraging candidates to remain patient until votes are counted.
For me, you know, when you were saying earlier, Doug, when you were mentioning this in the group, I actually don't think I took it seriously as you were saying, Doug. Because I'm looking back and I'm like, Trump is actually wiling, Doug. Like,
wild.
Like, and someone did say this, like, if this was any other country that was doing what Trump is doing, there'd be guns blazing, like, trying to, Doug. They'd be saying this is a dictatorship, or this is a flipping, like they'll be sending missiles and flipping, what you call it, dog, drones and shit.
This is unprecedented, my guy. Do you know what that means? We know the meaning of this goddamn word after 2020. This guy is, I mean, like, this is, it's nothing compared to what happened in 2000. Like, literally, they're just over halfway counting. And you come out and say that you've won and that everything else is a fraud. No way. the US. Like, I mean, I'd expect that from like Zim. Fine, Zim, we're used to it. Fine. It's like the US where they like to pretend they're the
but
shit.
I think,
and
I think,
this guy just comes and craps on him.
But Vumi, the thing is, this guy, I don't think he actually cares about the processes and things. Because if it's not in his favor, then the processes are, if it's in his favor, processes are fine. Just like as they've been saying, if he wins, then everything has been fine. If he loses, the only way he loses is if it's fraud. Like, how, in what world, is that the only way that you lose?
And you know what's really been insightful for me? I actually sat down with my mom the other day and we watched that documentary of his on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I was avoiding it for a long time because for some reason I thought it was like, he made it, but it's actually quite critical of it. And it's quite interesting to see the rise and fall of this guy and the way that he like thinks and the way that he acts. And the fact of the matter is that this guy is literally, he became president for the sake of being president, just because he could do it, right?
Yeah.
And like everyone who knows and says this guy has no moral compass, he has no ethics, he has no morals, he has no direction, he doesn't stand for anything.
Except for himself. Yeah.
It's just for himself, and he can do it because he can do it, because he says it, and because he says he can do it, and he'll do it. So the thing is, it's been fascinating to see the fact that this, him deciding to run for the presidency now, because he also like ran in 2000, but it wasn't serious. But running for the presidency in 2016 coincided with a lot of dissatisfaction in the status quo in the United States, and it also coincided with that inevitable backlash that white America was going to have against having a black president for two terms.
Yeah, it was inevitable. Right?
So it was that perfect timing that he just came in and was like, yeah, okay, cool, let's do this thing. And if you think about it, the fact that it's going down to the wire now just says everything you need to know about where the horse sits right now. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. This guy can literally lie in his speeches. Lie. Where you can sit there, anyone can sit there and Google, and in 1 minute you will have proved that man has just lied right on stage in front of 5,000 people.
Yeah.
And they'll still vote for him.
But also, like, I think we sometimes think that Americans know better. Do you know what I mean?
I actually think
Trump is just a symptom of what is popping in America. And I was telling someone today that Trump is America through and through. And I believe that most Americans, so most can be what, 51%, most Americans actually think like Trump. And they just want to seem like they are progressive, but most of them actually aren't. We just get the most content we get out of America is a very much liberal based content, you know? It's stuff that's in the metros a lot, in the metropolitan cities and all that stuff. That's very liberal. Yeah. Like, that's not most of America. You know what I mean? So we get an idea that America is a certain type of way, but nah, not really.
But also, they have one of the most fucked up electoral systems that I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
I think the world is also realizing that now. Because like a lot of commentators from watching Al Jazeera, everyone's like, I can't believe that it's taking them this long to count the thing. Like, I mean, even in SA, we would have known by now who won the election.
Yeah, no, but I think, no. I think this time, Vumi, also them, they would have known by now. It's just that this time it has to do with all these, the mail-in ballots.
Yeah, no, so, I feel that. But even so, if you look at it critically, a lot of their previous results are based off projections.
Yeah.
Like literally their system of counting and their system of holding elections, even the machinery, the infrastructure of it.
And
the methodology
is bad. And I don't know why they don't just do that, you know, the normal democratic thing of whoever with the most votes wins.
Because it benefits the duocracy, my guy. Come on.
I mean, yeah, I know that. But, like, it's like, come on, man. For how long? Yeah.
Well, I think if anything, this is going to be the moment where they need to really start thinking about reform. Because they can't be basing their elections on a system that was invented 300 years ago. For the 21st century, it's just impossible.
Yeah, man, it's...
The demographics have changed so much in the United States, like where these electoral college things, it's not representative anymore. But because it's benefited both sides for a very long time, except now it's not benefiting the Democrats if Trump wins. Like, it's a mess.
Yeah, it's an absolute mess, man. But yeah, dog, to be quite honest with you, I've been of the opinion that actually Trump will win again, right? I've been following this thing. But of late, like seeing the projections and the way the maps are set up in terms of like how the votes now, some states are leaning towards Biden now because of the whole mail and ballot thing, right? Because there's some states that I understand they weren't allowed to start counting votes as soon as the election day opened, right?
Yeah.
They could only start counting once the elections closed. Whereas other states, they were allowed to, as soon as November 3rd happened for them, they were allowed to start counting, right? Even though the booths or whatever wasn't, the poll stations weren't closed, you know? So these three or four states, they are the ones that are holding things up, and they are incidentally swing states. So now, because Trump sowed a lot of energy towards the fact that the mail-in ballot thing is fraudulent, blah blah blah. A lot of Republicans went to go vote physically, right? So in those states, majority of them, they voted via the Republicans voted in person. So a lot of those states turned out to be in favor of Trump in the beginning, you know, throughout the day.
Yeah.
But because when the polls closed, that's when they started counting the mail-in ballots, which were largely sent by Democrats because they are, you know, fearful of the virus and all that stuff and stuff. No. So now,
which is why they started seeding, like they were like, oh no, the mail-ins are going to be fraud, because they knew that the Democrats were going to win through that.
Yeah. So and it's just Democrats prefer to not go to polls apparently, and just, you know, so if there's more people who vote, it generally leans towards Democrats. And now it's looking
They don't get the day off in the US.
Yeah, which is wild to me, dog.
It's wild.
But I think that's just another way of suppressing votes.
Exactly.
They know, because who are the people that can afford to take a day off without, you know?
Exactly.
Those who actually should be voting are the ones that are working day in, day out and can't afford to take a day off. Unless it's a holiday.
I know the US, right?
They're very tactical.
They'll press you through stuff, my guy, and you won't even realize it.
Yeah.
Until it's too late.
But I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Biden's gonna take it, or do you think Trump's gonna take it?
After 2016, I don't know. I think Biden's got this. I think if they don't pull any bullshit with the mail-in ballot counting, because already Arizona, they're like, okay, no, we're going to start counting again on Thursday morning. Like, eh? Why?
Oh, they said they're going to start counting again?
Yes.
Nah, you see.
That's why I'm very uneasy, because a lot of channels have confirmed Arizona for Biden.
Yeah, so, I've seen that too.
Like, you're like, okay, cool. But like the New York Times is a bit more like, guys, they said they're only going to start counting again on Thursday morning. And like, I can't find a reason as to why that's happening.
I also don't understand. Why would you go and count again? It's clearly because you're meaning something.
No, they don't want to count. They'll continue.
They've stopped counting today for some crazy reason, and they'll continue on Thursday morning.
Oh, that is...
I don't know why.
Yeah, that's a bit strange. They should just continue counting, Doug. I don't understand. But yeah, I also saw in another place, I think Wisconsin, they also said that they're going to stop counting and they're going to start again tomorrow. So they, which is, yeah. But I understand that. But like a whole day, though, I don't understand that one, bro.
Yeah, that one is confusing. But I think your boys got it. I think the mail-in ballots are going to make things a lot closer. So I think he's got Michigan, and I think he's got Wisconsin.
I don't know. The thing is, yeah, but if he takes Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, and that other one, Nevada, then it's a wrap. Then he's got it. Yeah. Even if Trump takes Pennsylvania
and North Carolina, and Georgia,
But yeah, it's a movie actually, bro. But you know what? The other thing I was thinking for me, maybe briefly before we head out, can you actually just explain how it will impact us as South Africans, specifically to us? You know, maybe don't talk about. Oh, okay. Actually, yeah, the ordinary South African. So someone who doesn't necessarily have a business per se, or maybe they have a small business. Yeah. They only operate in South Africa, or you are hired by a business in South Africa. You know, you are low to middle class. Maybe how does the outcome of the elections in America, in the United States rather, how does it impact on you?
I'll tell you how.
Sure.
Because, I mean, in the medium term, I mean, obviously, if Trump wins, then his sort of policy of protectionism is obviously going to have an effect on our Alcoa treaties and all that, which is going obviously going to affect our ability to export to the US, which in turn would then affect SA agriculture and SA manufacturing. So if you were employed in any of those sectors, that would be an issue.
Yeah.
One. Two, it's a lot of it is also about the sort of political mood that it sets. Because and I mean, it's not like we're looking for examples from the US, but the fact of the matter is that if large democracies like those show that this kind of behavior is condoned and even promoted to a certain extent, I just think about how many mamparas are going to start popping up and trying the same shit in other countries, right? And I think obviously it'll be a bit more difficult in SA because I think democracies are driving to the extent where democracy or we just die or explode. I just think it's one of those things where when we're over this obsession with the ANC, I think it's going to be a very interesting country to vote in, because I think it's going to be like Belgium and shit. I think it's going to be coalitions all the way through until the kingdom comes.
Yeah,
like, I just think that it's also about the mood it sets. It's also about the collective psychology of like, so you're telling me we're really starting to go back to this hatred, to nationalism, to racism, to like, it's also about the psychology of it. It might not affect you on your in your 9-to-5 in your spani, but I think it has the capacity to affect people psychologically. And the thing is, for SA directly, it might also affect us in terms of the how easy it becomes for politicians to arouse xenophobia.
Right,
it becomes very easy for that to be the case. It becomes very easy for the DA to justify swinging even further into the abyss of the right. It justifies the EFF swinging even further to the abyss of xenophobia now, since they're putting South Africans first apparently. So it's all the kind of trends that it begins to set off. That I think is the biggest influence. But for now, it's all vibes and Twitter, man.
Yeah.
But now it's all vibes.
Yeah, for now it's just content that we can consume.
It's content, really. But I can't laugh at that, guys. Like, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, this is the content I want for 4 more years. I'm like, yo, I get what on Twitter, I get what laughing. But like, honestly, like, let's think about this like realistically for 1 second. It's insane. They were sitting and laughing at this stuff.
Yeah, Doug, and Trump is not playing around. Yeah. Dog. Like, this guy, he's serious about these things. As and thing is, I don't think he actually wants to be a president anymore. It's just that his ego won't allow him to be stepped aside unless it's on his own, you know, on his own terms type of thing.
Do me a favor, watch that documentary. I think it's called Trump, An American Dream. Watch it. It's on Netflix. It will open your mind in terms of how you look at the whole situation.
Okay. Nah. I'll definitely do that, beloved.
But yeah, man. I think that's a nice, juicy episode for our return to the airwaves.
Yeah, dog. It's definitely just a full-on political one, which is nice. It definitely lots and lots of missiology happening here.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But all right, man. Yeah. I think we should head out. Yeah. Is it dark that side, eh?
Yeah, it's dark as fuck.
Okay. All right, Doug. Anyway, so it's been your boy MZ.
And your boy Vumi.
And this has been the Must Chats podcast. Thanks for listening.
Cheers.
Doug.